Did you know that the pet care industry is a billion-dollar industry and it is continuously growing? But are the people who care for your pets growing as well? I'm Dara Forleo, and on The Business of Pet Care, we are going to talk about what really goes on behind the scenes of those grooming tables, those daycare walls, and those social media filters. Mobility is one of the most emotional issues that a dog family can face. When a dog starts slowing down, struggling to stand up, and is having these life-changing diagnoses, the question becomes bigger than, is it movement? Is it the quality of life? And today I am joined by Kate Titus. She is a canine mobility specialist. She's an author and founder of A Loyal Companion. And this is all about how dogs can stay active, comfortable, and connected through mobility support, adaptive equipment, education, and collaborative care. Welcome to The Business of Pet Care, where we are examining the systems, strategies, and decisions that are shaping modern pet businesses today. I'm your host, Dara Forleo, and today I am joined by Kate Titus, canine mobility specialist and founder of A Loyal Companion. Welcome to the show, Kate. How are you?
I'm well. How are you doing, Dara? Thanks for having me.
Well, thank you for joining me, because this is such a big topic. And, you know, we all come down and face this at some point or another. And your work is really very specific. This is an emotional space. And I'm having back-to-back episodes of this emotional space that we are jumping into. Last week, we talked to a couple that has the pet passages and they're the next end of life. And now here we are keeping that life together. When we talk about this mobility is for life, what does that mean?
So, you know, mobility is so important. It's such a basic tenet of living a full life. So when I think about mobility, I don't necessarily think just about moving on your own. That could be assisted mobility as well. So wheelchair, maybe it's a brace. Heck, maybe it's even being in a stroller and then getting to the favorite place to sniff. Mom or dad takes you out of that stroller. You get to do that. And then you're back in. To me, that's still some level of mobility and you're still part of the family. And that to me is one of the most important elements that we deal with on a day-to-day basis is helping dogs stay active in their family unit, because that's what we all want, right? We want that dog to be around us and really, you know, feeling like part of the family, because they are part of the family.
And this is, you mentioned the carts, the strollers. How about like braces, harnesses? What are there other ways to help with this equipment, help them?
Yeah, there's so much equipment out there. A lot of it does a lot of good. Some of it does absolutely nothing. And another little piece of it does harm. So finding the right piece for your dog's situation is really the most important part. As far as harnesses go, I really love the Help 'Em Up harness. Which I think is probably the number one harness in the veterinary world right now. I have come up on another one called the One Tigress. It has a bit of a tactical look for it. So it's not for everybody, but it's a good harness, especially for the bigger dogs that are bigger chested in the front. I think it does a better job of supporting the front end than even the Help 'Em Up does. But the thing that both of them have in common is handles. So, you know, it's hard to move a dog, especially a bigger dog, because you have to kind of man handle them or woman handle them,
yeah.
To be able to lift them up and put them in the vehicle or get them on the bed or on the couch or wherever you want to put them or wherever they want to go. And dogs just don't have handles. They aren't very easy to lift. And especially those dogs that don't like to be lifted, having the right piece of equipment helps them maintain their independence. So having a handle across their back, like between their shoulder blades and then one across their hips, you can just lift up onto whatever surface you're trying to get them into. And that makes a huge difference. I know from my own experience trying to lift and change position of an 85-pound Great Dane Foxhound mix when his back legs didn't work, and he also did not like to be lifted, it was a lifesaver. And that is the response I get from a lot of pet parents when I introduce it to them and say, you really need to get this. And they do. And it's an investment. I mean, the minimum cost on these is over $100, but it's definitely an investment in the future. So depending on where they are in their mobility journey, this can go all the way with them. It's just a great piece of equipment and is really, really important for pet parents because it saves their back too. That's the other side of it, is having something that doesn't get them hurt, because if you're if your caregiver is hurt, then everybody's in trouble.
And that you mentioned just a bit ago about having the equipment, but that, I mean, without it too, or without the training to teach them, not just the owners, but the dogs, how to accept it, the owners, how to use it, we without it could be doing more harm than we know by just trying to, I don't like saying manhandle, but assist and help without the proper structure.
Correct. Especially when we're looking at the dogs with back injuries. I see a lot of intervertebral disc disease dogs. So those are the dogs that have herniated a disc, or maybe they've had surgery for that condition, or they have something going on in their spine. Especially the dogs that are in that, you know, 30-pound range, it's very easy to reach down and pick them up by their middle. Well, all of a sudden you end up with a dog whose spine does this, and that is the exact opposite of what you want to do. So having the right piece of equipment is really, really important.
Bear hug? Yeah. Is that, that's almost that bear hug when you go around the chest around and lift?
That's actually called shrimping. So if you go around the back of their legs and around the front, that's a shrimp because they end up looking like a shrimp.
Yeah. Okay. And then the other one is the underlift.
Right. That's more of the forklift, you know, one of those. But you want to make sure that we got to have fun with this. You want to make sure you're keeping that back flat. So that means you want to focus on making sure you have a hand under the pelvis and a hand under the shoulder girdle, and then you're able to lift and that back stays flat.
Stays flat.
And that's what you're
looking for. Oh, look at all that. What's that called?
That is called doing it right.
That's called doing it right. That's the only way to do it. Yeah,
exactly.
I know. With having the dachshunds and always having dachshunds and having a Cheweenie, oh my gosh, those back injuries. Create that is just so, just to see what they go through when it starts hurting or being in pain and trying to introduce those. When families first come to you, what are you assessing that is not maybe obvious to them right away? What are they coming for?
If we're talking about the full assessment, I'm looking at both the pet parent and the dog. So I'm watching the way they interact. I'm listening to the questions they ask. I'm paying attention to the information that they bring me. That tells me how engaged they are with the dog's care and also what their level of comfort is with working on the dog. So, and working with the dog. So a lot of those, in a lot of those IVDD cases, we have dogs who are urinary fecal incontinent. So you get an idea pretty quickly how they're going to deal with the ick factor. Because, you know, it's pee and poop. So I'm looking at that. I'm also looking at, you know, what's their physical build. If I've got an 85 pound, you know, 80 year old woman and she's got a Ridgeback who is, you know, almost as heavy as she is, that has a bad leg.
As big as her.
Yeah, we have to be a little bit more creative in the way we provide support with that. And I'm also looking at how willing is the dog to allow some sort of support or some help. The flip side of that is something I call OHD, or overly helpful disease. And that's where we have a pet parent that wants to do everything for their dog. And that's not helpful either. That can really limit the dog's independence. It can limit their choice, which is, you know, their agency. We don't want to limit that. It takes helicopter parent to a new level. So I'm always looking for those kind of interactions, because I have to be able to manage my recommendations and make it and present it in a way that makes sense to them, that plays to their strengths and maybe downplays some of the areas where they're a little weaker.
That's it, because you answered my question. I was going to go into was that unintentional challenge that owners may put on them, but you really just answered that. So those helicopter parents, getting in there. I know I'd be one of them. I wouldn't lie. I'd be one of them. I'd be what else can I do? What's next?
Right. But you know, you don't want to see the dog in pain. Nobody wants to see the dog in pain, and if taking steps makes them uncomfortable, you don't want that to happen. But there are times when, you know, recovery is uncomfortable sometimes. So as long as it's not painful, we need to let them do some things.
That is a good place for us. We got to take a quick break. Up next, we are going to move from the business Kate built into the bigger idea behind why movement is directly tied to the dog's quality of life. We will be right back. Welcome back to the Business of Pet Care. Mobility is not just about walking. It affects confidence, participation, emotional well-being, and the way a dog remains part of the family life. I am going to jump back in here right now with asking Kate, because I want to know, how did you get into this? How did you find that this became your superpower, your niche?
Completely by accident. This is not what I set out to do. In fact, this is a second career for me. I spent 15 years in magazine publishing, which I loved, until the universe finally said, yeah, we're kicking you out of this. You got to find something else to do. But I started with wanting to be a trainer. And then I realized how much I really did not like the psychology involved. And if I'm super honest, how much I would have to deal with the pet parents. So I decided to check out a canine massage class, and I fell in love. And that was my first service that I offered through a loyal companion. And my instructor in that group had a dog who had a TPLO, so he had a knee surgery that went bad. And she took us to her appointment with that went bad. Yeah. So he had what's called a pivot shift, which basically means the surgery didn't do what it was supposed to do. It was moving too much, so it didn't secure the knee. And so she took us to her holistic veterinary appointment, and they recommended OrthoPets, which was a maker of veterinary orthotics and prosthetics, so braces and prosthetics. And within 6 months, I became their first distributor here in Arizona and across the country, actually. So from there, it went to pool proofing and helping people keep their dogs safe around water, especially their own pool, and teaching them how to swim, to wheelchairs. And it has just grown from there. And I knew pretty quickly that I wanted to have my own pool, because even though it's hot here in Arizona, You still don't get in the water after October, beginning of November. It's just too cold. So I knew I wanted to have a pool.
I was
so
from New England. I find that hard to believe. But.
Yeah, I lived in Boston for 8 years, so I get you on that one. So that's kind of the origin story of where a loyal companion came from. And Harley, who was my, the 85-pound Great Dane Foxhound that I was telling you about, he was our chief inspiration officer. In fact, he's over my shoulder there. And he's with me every time. So he is right over there. That's him.
Yeah.
Right there. And he is, he's with us. He passed away in November of the year we opened in January. So he got to see the facility. He got to play around. He had no interest in getting in the pool. So, but he at least got to see the dream come true.
Yeah, those pools, that's going to be a lot of maintenance.
And it is a lot of dog hair. It is a lot.
I imagine.
Multiple points where we stop the hair from getting into the filter.
I got to ask. Okay, so this is totally going to go off, but I got to know, how do you keep them clean? That's got to be, is it a different filtration, different chemical? It can't be chlorine.
It's not chlorine. We use a copper ionization system that was designed specifically for our pool. We have skimmers. We have fine mesh over all of our skimmers, so we can clean that hair off of there before it goes into the system. We also have a place directly before the motor that we can clean it off, and then we also can get it out of the sand filter if we need to. So we use a sand filter, copper ionization system, and then we'll do a chlorine shock on the weekend just to give it a little bit of support, because at the end of the day, every dog that we put in the water is equal to about 10 people in the water. So on a good Saturday, we'll probably have 20 dogs in the water. So that's about 200 people in our 14 by 28 inch, 8 foot pool. So that's about 9,000 gallons of water with 200 people in it. We spend a lot of time on maintenance and cleaning. You know, we backwash at least once a day, and we're cleaning the bottom every morning before we start, checking chemicals, checking levels, making sure that we're where we need to be. So yeah, keeping that clean and regulated is essential for us.
I can imagine. And I asked about that just because you think about all the dock dives and the places that have the new party pools and the dog swims. And it's like, how do you keep that all clean? I don't think I bring my dog. And then,
you know, it's important. Yeah. It's important that you understand the cleaning protocols of where you're going, because it's not just about, you know, it's about bad things that grow in there, right? You got to worry about making sure that you're killing what needs to be killed in there.
Yeah. Just working in a grooming salon for 30 years, like I did, I know what grows inside those tubs when you're not cleaning properly and what spreads, and it's not good. It's not pleasant, and it doesn't smell good when you come back in the next day when it's not done right. So it's why I keep my dogs home. Not everybody has the same routines. Not everyone is created equal in those ways. So when families are coming, what do they, I mean, that's probably not a question that they're asking. How do you clean your pool before my dog comes in? How do you sanitize? How do you disinfect in between all of this? And my first brain goes, what happens when the dog's done in the pool? Are they rinsed off? What kind of bath does that look like to get the chlorine off?
You don't have to do that. So the copper actually makes the coat very soft. The only drawback that we would have with the copper, and this only happens when we have a dog that's going to be swimming 3 or 4 times a week. Some of our lighter coated dogs will take on a green tinge, and that's from the copper drying on the coat. So you think about all of the copper fountains, right? So the edges, the part where the copper has dried, it has a green tinge to it. Okay. That's the only drawback to the copper. And if they would rinse the dog off after the swim, they could probably get rid of most of that. But it's also something that their groomer can work with them to help lighten that up. And like I said, it's on the very white dogs that have a coat, a triple coat or a double coat. That's where
we're going to be. Probably one of the
And it takes a lot of swimming. Yeah, I think we've only seen it happen once since we've been open, and that particular set of dogs swam for an hour upwards of 4 times a week. So the dog was in the water a lot.
A lot. And what kind of injury does that dog particular, what was that injury or what was going on that it needed that much maintenance?
Because that was when we launched our business, we had a recreation side. So that dog didn't have an injury. That dog was there for recreation swim. Since COVID, we have not done any recreation work. Okay. We only do mobility dogs since COVID.
So what breed was it?
It was a golden retriever, an English cream.
English cream. Okay. I was going to say, I'm going through not a husky. It was not a small. I was leaning towards the
golden retriever.
Or a lab. I was like, what's a lab? They got thick coats too. It's repelling a lot of that water out in those labs.
Yep. Yes, it is. Yes, it is. So.
That is so fascinating. I love the pool talk. That is really, and they're swimming, not on a treadmill. Do you have the treadmill?
The pool is difficult to manage. Imagine adding something that is electronic underneath it. So no, that's not a way I want to go. It's not a way I want to go.
Okay. That's good to know. Cause I know that's pretty common. I've known a couple places around us that do that. So, I know our thoroughbreds, when they come off the track for a break, they get to go and do their recreational swim too at the, farms when they're on break to keep in shape, and they love it or they hate it. One of those, love or hate.
I just try to keep the underwater treadmill to, the veterinary rehab facilities so that they can, better monitor that. I think that's a little line too far for us. None of us are veterinarians. Okay. I feel very comfortable swimming with any dog, but when it comes to an underwater treadmill, I think there are more elements in there than I'm really comfortable working with. So I try to make sure I stay in my lane on that, because after all, we are here to support the primary care veterinarian and any rehab care veterinarian or neurologist that are involved in care. We're here to be a support for those veterinarians and do what we do well, which is making sure we create a safe space for the dog to get the exercise that they need, build the strength, the balance, the flexibility, the proprioception, build those things back in a very safe environment. And that's our goal, because all of that leads to a great quality of life.
Oh, that's an excellent way to end this segment. We have to take a quick break. I love that you said that. Coming up, we are going to talk about how Kate connects work with we're going to continue that conversation with the vets, the families, all those practical decisions that are happening. And Kate, real quick, before we sign off here, where can people find you?
Are at aloyalcompanion.com. You can also find us on Facebook, /aloyalcompanion. We're also on Instagram. So, and I'm also on LinkedIn. So any of those spaces.
Perfect. Thank you. We will be right back after this message. Welcome back to the Business of Pet Care. Do not miss a second of this show or any of your Now Media favorites, streaming live or on demand anytime. And grab that free Now Media TV app on Roku or ISO, or listen to this podcast at nowmedia.tv. Now Media TV is available 24/7, so the stories that you always are caring about are within your reach. And we are back. Welcome back. Canine mobility. This is some major support work, and this is done best when it is in a collaborative environment. That is meaning the vets that are diagnosing and the treatments that are being sent over, the families that are providing this daily care. Specialists like Kate are the best way to get this help translated for the dog's needs. And this is how you stay and keep this going. Kate, welcome back. Thank you again for joining us. How do you describe, I think you kind of started talking a little bit about it before, your role and your relationships with the vets. Is this something that has to be done just in local area, or is this something that you can help? What's that distance look like?
So, our role is we're here to support the family and the veterinarian. And the way we do that is I kind of think of us as translators and educators, right? You've got your veterinarian who makes the diagnostic call on what's happening. They prescribe the medications. They'll give you guidelines. It's our job to help you figure out how to live and care for your dog every day with that diagnosis, those medications, and the guidelines that your veterinarian has given you. So, you know, there are times when you walk out of the vet's office and they say, okay, well, keep him quiet for a month and then come back and see me. Well, how do I do that? What does quiet mean? How do I make sure he doesn't sleep on the floor? Right. So we're here to kind of make that a reality. And that, that to me is where that's where our value is, because it's in that at home section that's where quality of life is. Right. That's how we're figuring out what, you know, we want to keep him quiet, but how do we, you know, how do we keep him engaged? How do we keep him doing and having a good life? So that's going to mean things like that. Maybe that's licky mats. You know, maybe that's 4 or 5 minute walks a day. We're still quiet, but we have to keep moving because you don't want to lose muscle mass. There are a lot of bad things that come with complete quiet. So how do we keep that dog engaged? How do we keep them as happy and fulfilled as possible while they can't go for their normal 2 mile walk in the morning? So what do we do? And how do you do it safely without causing any additional damage or problem? So that's our job. And that's where we really shine, because we're not veterinarians. We don't pretend to be veterinarians. That's not what we do. We don't do that very well at all. So we're here to help them apply that veterinary guidance to their everyday lives.
And that is so stressful for a dog who's extremely active and then gets told, oh, you just blew out your ACL. Now you're going to be on kennel rest for 6 weeks before you can move. I mean, how mentally straining is that on the dog too?
Incredibly, because they've gone from, you know, doing those long walks or having those activities, and that's at that intensity is out of the question. So because they're healing, I mean, the dog's not going to self-limit. You've probably heard the phrase that, you know, a dog is four legs and a spare, and that's the way they treat it, right? So if that back right leg, just pick it up and let's go. But that doesn't help things heal, and that's probably also the reason why somewhere upwards of 50 to 60% of dogs that tear one ACL are going to tear the other one, because they just pick it up and go on the other one. So we're here to try to keep that period as productive as we can on the healing side, but also we're trying to keep it not being a negative or being a real setback mentally and emotionally. We need to keep them. We need to keep them busy. We need to keep them engaged, and we need to keep them fulfilled.
And that's that enrichment you were talking about. I know that's a big word being used loosely around the industry right now, but that enrichment really actually means something in this case to keep them from losing themselves. Sorry, I have a dog here who is like wanting dinner now, and it's still got 20 minutes.
The enrichment goes, I mean, there are a lot of ways to do that. It could be as simple as a toilet paper roll. You know, I've also had people just throw a, you know, give the dog a box. They love to tear up boxes. Fantastic. They're not, as long as they're not going to eat it, and they're not going to eat the tape that comes off, they're not going to eat anything in it, they just enjoy the ripping. That's enrichment. There are ways to find it, but you really need to actually be looking for it and paying attention to what your dog likes to do. You know, where do they like to smell? Yeah. Guess what? You can play, you can do nose work games in your house with a dog that's recovering from a CCL injury or even a back injury. If they like to go hunt and they like to go look for things and they like to use their nose, fantastic. It's a great way to do it. It's a great rainy day game for them as well, even if they're not recovering from something. But anything that gets them to use their brain is what we're looking for, because we want this to be challenging, and we want them to feel like they have a focus, because there's not much worse than being bored, and dogs do get bored.
Yes, they do. They're driving me crazy today. So one's gonna make an appearance for a bit until, oh my goodness. But that's, my guys, like, they have done nose work. They really enjoyed it. They lost interest quick, but that's because they were getting a little too pudgy from too many treats that they found. So got to watch that weight too. How, when you get, do you get a referral from a vet, or does it work in the, like, how would an owner find you first, or the vets are going to refer to you?
It happens both ways. If the client comes to us independent of the veterinarian, we will request records from all of the vets that they've seen. So if that's a orthopedic surgeon or a neurologist, as well as their primary care, we're going to get all those records just to make sure that something that we recommend is not going to be counterproductive or contraindicated. So we shouldn't be doing it. We want to know that. So, you know, we don't want to put a, you know, a 6 of 6 heart murmur dog in the water. You know, we want to be careful about anything that's going to cause harm, because that's the last thing we want to do. So clients can come to us directly. It's not uncommon for me to get phone calls from primary care doctors or surgeons, orthopedic surgeons, on what is possible, especially as it relates to the bracing and the prosthetic side. So some pre-surgery planning is very important, especially if we're doing a prosthetic of some sort, because there are some requirements of how much limb we need left to be able to create a workable prosthetic. So, it's a very open and fluid process on how we see our new clients.
Wow, that is so interesting. It's just that there's so much involved. You wouldn't think about the little intricacies about that. And then having to have the communication with the owners after the vets and having the owners maintain in between visits. What is that like?
We see very commonly, we'll see our clients about once a week, once every 10 days. So in that way, we can be a very important conduit to between the pet parent and the veterinarian, because we're going to see them a whole lot more often than their veterinarian is. So we can highlight changes because we're going to see them and document them. So we can highlight those. We can communicate with the veterinarian. There have been cases where I was working with a senior dog and I didn't know what this was at the time, but I knew it wasn't right. Majorly inflamed lymph nodes. Dog ended up having lymphoma. They were able to catch it and treat it, and the dog lived another year. So it's wow. Situations like that where having eyes and hands on the dog in between vet mm-hmm. visits can be a really big asset to those veterinarians. And every veterinarian I've worked with has been appreciative of us sharing the information and the things that we see. But I think the other side of that is that we're pretty careful about what we report and what we tell the pet parent. So it's not, you know, I'm not going to feel those lymph nodes and say, oh, I think your dog has lymphoma. That's not what I'm going right. to say. I'm going to say, yeah. Hey, you know what? You need to go and have this checked out. Ask your veterinarian what they think about this, and let them yeah. manage that care relationship. That's not my role to get in there. It's my role to recognize and report. And that's what we do. Now that's harder. In fact, that's almost impossible for me to do on video consults, which we do. So I've done okay. consults with in Michigan and in Maine. I've done them from all over the country, but there's still things that I can see. I just don't have one of my senses to be able to work with.
Yeah. So. That is a ton of information. We have to take a break. And when we come back, first off, you're going to tell us where we can find you. And then we're going to start talking about that book being publicized. So up next, we are going to bring this back around. We will see you after this message. Welcome back to the Business of Pet Care. Don't miss a second of this show or any Now Media TV favorite streaming live and on demand anytime. Grab the free Now Media TV app on Roku or ISO, or listen to the podcast at nowmedia.tv. Now Media TV is available 24/7 so that the stories you care about are always within reach. Welcome back. I am joined by my co-host, Beatrice Louise, in this final segment, and we are focusing on practical guidance, what dog owners, pet professionals, service businesses can do together to support the dogs facing these mobility challenges. And I've been excited to talk about this. What is it that every dog owner should be watching for as their dogs age and start moving differently?
I think the most important thing is the recognition and knowing that age is not a disease, right? Your dog doesn't start limping because they're getting older. They don't slow down because they're getting older. There is a process around that. So as you begin to see change in your dog, no matter what that is, maybe it's eating habits, maybe it's sleeping habits, mm-hmm. maybe it's the distance they can walk, the speed they can walk, challenge getting up from a down, or maybe some groaning noises when they lay down. Those are not because they're getting older. Those are from processes like arthritis They could be something related to a thyroid condition. It could be cognitive dysfunction. It could be a lot of different things. But falling back on the fact that my dog's getting old, so these things are expected to happen. If you can get out of that mindset, you can actually increase their quality of life, usually pretty significantly, by taking some minor steps. And the first of which is to go to your veterinarian and talk about what you're seeing. I think that's one of the most important things. And I think in this day and age, we have the opportunity to be able to show our veterinarian exactly what we're seeing at home just by take a photograph, take a video, and bring those in and show them to your vet. Because that is huge. I mean, I'm sure you do a really great impression of your dog and how hard it is for them to get up, but it's much more informative for your veterinarian if they can actually see the dog do it by themselves. Right.
Yeah.
So I think that is the biggest mindset shift for me. It's not because your dog is getting older. It's because there is a process happening in their bodies, and figuring out what that is and how you can control pain if there's pain involved in it, how you can improve their mobility or the comfort of their mobility. You'll see a change in the way they move and their level of comfort, but you have to recognize it as a problem in the first place and be able to report it to your vet.
And this leads really well into what I think is really important, because I think a lot of times as professionals, we tend to almost cross the line where we're trying to not diagnose, but almost diagnosing. So what should groomers, trainers, daycare teams, pet sitters, any of these other professionals that are part of the dog's life, what should we understand about that mobility challenge and how we can properly notice and notify the owners?
The most important thing you can do is recognize and record. So it's not your job to say why the dog is limping. It's your job to recognize that they are and to bring it to the attention of your client. That is it. So you can say, you know, I noticed Rocky was, while we were bathing, he didn't want to put a lot of weight on his back left leg. Your veterinarian would be the best place to figure out what's going on. But I've noticed that the last 2 months that I've been working with him. You know, whatever that time frame is. Yeah. Or another big one for groomers is recognizing changes in nail length, especially on the back limbs of your older dogs. And when I say older, I mean like middle age. So from about six on, are there any of the nails that are worn at a different angle? They're shorter than the rest of them, because that can indicate that there is some dysfunction there in the back, that the dog is not lifting up his paw enough to get it through without scraping the nail. There are a lot of neurologic conditions that's kind of the canary in the coal mine, so to speak, to let us know that there is something going on there. And that's a good way for especially groomers to be able to say, hey, we noticed this. The other big one, I think, especially with trainers or with groomers, is going to be how they respond to being asked to do something. So if you normally ask a dog to step up on the table or hop up on the table and they're reluctant to do that, that's a red flag. And that's something you should be sharing with your pet partners. For our trainers, if you have a dog who doesn't want to do a sit, or maybe doesn't want to do a down, doesn't want to put their feet on something, if they're refusing to do something that they had done in the past, then I would look at pain as a cause. And that is definitely something you want to share with the pet parent. Again, if you can get it on video, even better, then they can share it with their veterinarian. But you're looking for actions or inaction outside the norm. That's the biggest piece you're looking for as a professional.
I love the nail. That is something I think we just automatically do nails and don't even register that, oh, that's short. Oh, why are those down to the quick and the other ones aren't? How come I haven't noticed that before? That's a really good, especially for newer groomers coming into the industry and bathers, to take note of that, because that is not a common concept that is talked about during an onboarding or a new process for them coming into the business.
I think once you get, especially with the bathers, as they're bathing and the dog is, I don't want to say reactive. I want to say they're recognizing that, and I usually see this with hips, where if they're sudsing up the hips and the dog is like, what are you doing? Don't do that. That can be a pain indicator. So recognizing those things can be helpful. Maybe picking up a foot to clean the paw or the paw pads, and the dog is unstable. That's another big one. So you want to be looking for things outside of the norm. That doesn't mean they're zebras. You know, it's not the zebra coming around the corner, but it is something that's out of the norm for that particular dog.
I know you came in and did a session with our student body and alumni recently. And is there any other note-taking? What am I trying to say? Any other recommendations for taking better notes when groomers, train anybody working with the animal can pass on?
So I think the most important tip that I can give you is to be consistent with it. So your front desk staff, if you have front desk, they should be watching every dog walk in the door. And they should be making a note of any changes that they see. Maybe they're hesitant, if you have steps, they're hesitant to walk up the steps to get into the building. They don't want to walk across the slick floor, something like that. So they're always looking for that. And then as far as your bathers and your groomers would go, I would recommend that they break down the dog by section of the body. So, you know, head and neck, forelimbs, torso, just like you would for a groom. When you're learning how to do a particular groom, use that same format. You're already comfortable with that. But you should be checking, you should have a list of things that you're checking for. So you're always checking the nails and the nail length. You can use the same checklist that you have for when you're doing your groom and the things that you always do. But you need to look through a different lens. And I think breaking it down in a way that makes sense to you will help you do that every time and get in the habit of doing that. And I think the other thing that is important is that you keep, you listen to that voice in your head that says, oh, that was weird. You know, if you think, oh, what, why did he do that? Listen to those voices and record what you're seeing, because that's often an indicator of some challenge.
Fantastic. That is exactly what I was hoping you were going to come and say. That is what everyone needs to hear. We have a couple more minutes left. So I just want to say, Kate, thank you for joining me. For anybody watching and realizing that their dog might need some additional support, where can they find you? And that is your book published? Is that ready to go?
I do have two books published. One is called Sit, Stand, Go. The other one is called Emotion to Motion. Those are both available on Amazon or at my website, which is aloyalcompanion.com. And I have two books in the works now. One of them is called Moving Through Valley Fever. We in Tucson live in the epicenter of Valley Fever, which is a fungus that lives in the soil here that really comes out in all different ways. It can infect, you know, the eyes, the brain, the spinal cord, the bones. It's primarily a lung disease, but if it gets into the rest of the body, it can be pretty serious, very serious, actually. So I have a book out coming out probably in the next 3 or 4 months called Moving Through Valley Fever. And then I also have a book with my co-author, Dr. Liz Devitt. We are working on a book about quality of life and how it's important from young dogs all the way through to an end of life discussion. So I'm a busy kid when it comes to writing right now.
I was just about to say, you are extremely busy. And so with that being said, I'm going to give you back your evening. Thank you so much for talking about this. This is a great topic. This is something that everyone needs to learn about, that the dogs are active and we need to protect them just as much. What I am walking away from this, this is a great conversation, and mobility support is not just about adding equipment or doing stuff that you might not be doing the best for. So be sure, this is about timing, the education, the collaboration, and helping dogs continue to participate in the lives that they are already in and they know and they love. To everyone watching, have a great week. Thank you so much for joining us. This has been The Business of Pet Care. I am Dara Forleo, and we will see you next time.